Welcome to Inside Sponsorship, the show that provides sponsorship professionals with advice, insights, and news so they can maximize their commercial programs and achieve best practice.
Despite Mark and I ahead in the show being confused about what show number we are actually up to, I can confirm that this is episode 16 of Inside Sponsorship. Thanks for tuning in again, and hi to all our regular listeners. And if you're tuning in for the first time, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Daniel Oyston, and ahead, I have what is a wide-ranging and absolute cracking chat with Chris Bayliss from the Sponsorship Collective. I've followed Chris's content online for some time now, and after he reached out a few weeks ago to let us know that he liked the podcast, I thought it was a good excuse to have him on the episode. The chat with Chris is chock full of really practical advice, and it's delivered amongst some really good examples and some great stories. And we talk a fair bit about valuation of your assets, which is a nice tie-in with Mark's blog at the start of the month, which is about three ways to value your sponsorship assets. Speaking of Mark, I caught up with him before he jumped on a flight to Melbourne, Australia, to catch up with current clients, prospective clients, and just generally hobnob around town. In this episode, Mark discusses his latest blog, which looks at how to use sponsorship benefits wisely. Here's Mark. Mark Thompson, welcome to show 15. Did you ever think we'd get to show 15? Oh, actually, is this 16?
I'm not sure what it is, but all I do know is that you promised me, episode one, that if we get to 20, you'll bring cake.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I do. I'll get it out. If you don't bring the cake on show 20, there'll be problems.
Okay, fair enough.
You'll get an official warning, written warning, and we'll have 2,500 witnesses to it.
And hi to all our witnesses. I'll make sure we have cake for episode 20 once I figure out what episode we're actually up to. Now, you and I in the last week read a great article by a contact of ours, Jordan Leask, over at Tickstar, and it was titled "The Top 5 Signs Your Client Entertainment Is Not Working and What to Do About It." But when I shared that article with you and said, I think this one's pretty good, you said, yeah, I think it's great too, but we could probably add some commentary around it to help make it more relevant for actual sponsorship managers and how they position the corporate hospitality and the entertainment tickets for their sponsors, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, hospitality often makes up, you know, a fairly important part of any sponsorship program, but it also plays its own unique individual role in organisations outside of sponsorship. So this article is really focused on that, the hospitality sales and stuff like that, and major events and things like that. Hospitality is, you know, a very big standalone function. However, because hospitality plays a big role in sponsorship, I kind of thought, well, this is a very, very relevant article to sponsorship as well. And, you know, and it kind of falls back into what we've been talking about recently around, you know, best practice and, you know, how to give sponsors what they really will value rather than just what you think they want.
And it's all about trying to use your benefits as wisely as possible to help sponsors, isn't it?
Exactly right. I mean, you're trying to create a partnership here with a sponsor, not just a sponsorship, you know. So, you know, we're talking about how you can use your systems and whatever you've got in place to actually use your benefits to really drive a nice partnership with your sponsors.
And so you think that using benefits wisely lies in three simple rules or approaches?
Yeah, I mean, the article that Jordan wrote, he talks about knowing who's using the hospitality benefits, how those benefits are allocated, the internal barriers to using hospitality as a benefit, the struggles to measure ROI on hospitality, and the errors in multi-year terms. So there's five things there. You can really, from a sponsorship point of view, answer those five, you know, errors that people are making with three simple rules.
And it's no surprise what the first one is.
No, not at all. Always align objectives, benefits to objectives. So, you know, the three common problems which clearly show the sponsor objectives that would warrant a sponsor using hospitality are not higher on the priority list for those making those errors, basically. So, you know, if you're basically not knowing who's using your hospitality, you're not knowing how the hospitality is being allocated.
Why would a sponsor take hospitality in a contract and not know who's using it? Why would they pay money, in theory or contra, for that benefit but not know who's using it?
Yeah, well, I mean, often it would be just part of the package. You know, it's not something that they really value as an objective that's helping drive their business forward. Or, you know, sometimes you do get it even with those that really align, where it just doesn't fit with their calendar, so they just offload it to staff, and staff can use it and stuff.
Am I wrong in saying that as a sponsor, if you're a brand listening to the podcast and you're getting hospitality and you don't really want it, you should have a conversation with the rights holder?
Yeah, and switch it out or figure out how you can use it, utilizing other benefits. You know, you may not have to have a conversation with the rights holder about you don't like the hospitality, but if you've got digital benefits and EDM benefits and other things like that, you could run competitions, you could give it away, you can start to generate your own audience.
Engage with the community.
Yeah, just because you've got a benefit you can't use doesn't mean you can't use that benefit to drive your objectives.
And is it fair to say that a sponsorship manager, well, I know it's fair to say the sponsorship manager should be discussing how things are going with the sponsor regularly.
Yeah.
But they should be checking in on something like hospitality, which is quite easy to get off track, isn't it? Oh, I don't use the tickets anymore because they're too hard to get RSVPs, or my neighbour comes with me. Mm. Or so is that one that they should focus on more regularly if it's in it, so that it doesn't fall off the radar?
Yeah, and even if you're not talking to them all the time, because sometimes you don't talk to, you know, all of your sponsors all the time, you can see who's using what. And so, because you're walking around, you're seeing who's there and all of that sort of stuff. If they're consistently not taking advantage of some of those assets, help them.
Okay, so the first one is always to make sure that the benefits are aligned to the objectives. Tick. What's the second one?
The relationship is paramount to renewal and acquisition.
Yes.
So, you know, that's basically talking about having a deeper relationship than a transaction. So that you can drive awareness around how a sponsor's engaging with you, how they're using their benefits, you know, whether they're finding value in them or not. So that is the most important thing about sponsorship management.
My question's about regularly speaking to the sponsors should have happened under this one, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it could have. Yeah. It should have. But basically, I mean, you know, the article does talk about old school methods of multi-year deals, and that, you know, people should look more fluidly on year-to-year deals so that people are getting the most out of their hospitality. And, you know, that's great from a hospitality sales perspective, but that's probably the only thing I disagree with in the whole article around the multi-year deal thing, because multi-year deals are vital to building continuity and actually a partnership and learning. You know, the first year you're learning from each other, you're getting a feel for each other, and then you really hit your strides going forward. But it doesn't mean you can't be flexible. If you're finding a partner is not finding value in their hospitality, it might be the offering of hospitality you've got them. It might be how they're, you know, using it. You need to revisit that. And if you've got good systems in place, which moves on to the third one, you can actually be flexible and switch things out and put things in.
Because aligning benefits to objectives isn't just something or an exercise you go through at the start of a relationship. It should be something that you revisit all the time, regardless of whether it's end of season or renewal time.
That's right. Well, you know, people change, objectives change, goals change from both sides of the fence.
So the relationship is paramount. That's number two. What's number three?
So number three is probably a bit of a good rule just to keep in mind generally when dealing with any sponsorship, but it's focus on providing value to the customer and use your systems to drive the value. So that really ties together there the whole, are they finding value in the hospitality? If they're not, what have you got available that you can switch out that doesn't cost you anymore that they would find value in? That gives you an asset in hospitality that you can then go and sell and make more money and give them something that they value. So using your systems to drive that value. But it may also be that you can quickly and easily look, oh, you've got this hospitality. You don't necessarily have 50 people from your office in this, you know, area that this sponsorship's being activated. But you do have competitions. It is an important place for you to drive, you know, customer engagement and generate new leads. So how can we use your other assets, or what else can we help you with to actually still use that hospitality, but maybe by running competitions, by doing, you know, customer or, you know, staff reward schemes, and actually using it by just talking to them and finding out how that could be used to drive value.
Or even just to use it to support charities that the sponsor may support.
And that's, you know, that's positive brand, you know, positioning and stuff like that. So that would align to that type of benefit. So it is just having that conversation. And, you know, a lot of people struggle to be able to find the time to sit down and figure out, you know, how that all could piece together. So if you've got a good system, you can sit there and go, you know, okay, these guys have that and they've got that and we've got this available inventory and this is what it costs and stuff like that. And you can easily mould it together and have an open conversation with a sponsor.
Cool, cool. How do we take all that forward though?
Well, I mean, there's a few things that have never changed in sponsorship, and that is, you know, client happiness, client servicing, and providing value. They've always been the pillars to sales and sponsorship and stuff like that. So those haven't changed. It's just using modern day, you know, methods to you bring those techniques forward with you. So Tickstar is a good system. That's, you know, a system that can be used to drive and sell, you know, one-off pieces and stuff like that. Maybe a sponsor swaps it out, doesn't want it. You give them something else. You can then use something like Tickstar to drive your bottom line and sell that sort of inventory that's there. You've got basically, you know, things like Sponsor, which you can use your look at your distress stock. You can have a look at what costs are, just compare it against rate cards, all that sort of stuff, so that you can actually drive value to your sponsor.
Very good. And in your blog last week, you've got a link to Jordan's article, obviously, so that's on our site. We'll put a link in the show notes, and obviously you can head to tickstar.com.au and see the actual real live article yourself.
Yeah, and I believe as a user of Tickstar, you can actually create your own account and you manage it all yourself, so you're not actually handing over anything to them either.
I think it's a great idea. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, mate.
Chris Bayliss is a sponsorship strategy and valuation expert and is the managing director of the Sponsorship Collective. Over his career, Chris has managed the entire spectrum of the sponsorship process, raising millions of dollars for charities, associations, education, sport, and not-for-profits. Chris works with brands and sponsorship properties to define their sponsorship goals, determine market value of their sponsorship assets, and create strategies that work. While Chris is the managing director of the Sponsorship Collective, he is also a board member of the Association of Fundraising Professionals and an international speaker and consultant on all things sponsorship marketing. Chris is based out of Ottawa, Canada, and as such, he now holds a very prestigious title of the first Canadian to be on the show. Here's Chris. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. This is great.
I want to start these chats with a question that is a bit more fun than simply the stock standard tell us your background, which we'll get to in a second. And I did steal this question from Sean Callanan over at the Sports Geek podcast. But to kick off in the morning, what is the first thing you open when you pick up your phone?
Well, I'd love to say it's something, you know, cool and fascinating, but is my email followed by Twitter? And, you know, something that I've noticed in particular of late is that while my focus is North America, I'm noticing a pretty sizable following in Australia and Europe, which means I wake up to a cascade of emails and tweets. So I like to catch up on what happened while I was sleeping. And then I'm somewhat ashamed to admit the next thing I do is open up Clash of Clans. I'm not a big game player, but somehow I became addicted to this fairly silly game. And so the next thing I do is check on my village.
Very good. Very good. Okay. So now let's learn a little bit about you professionally. Where are you based and what's your background that's led up to you starting the Sponsorship Collective?
Well, I am in Ottawa, Canada, and we were talking before we started things up. It's either the coldest or second coldest capital in the world, but whether or not we're actually the coldest doesn't matter because it is freezing here in the winter. But I am my firm focuses across North America, so Canada and the U.S., and I happily escape for much of the Canadian winter. But before we created the Sponsorship Collective, I spent a decade or so on the front lines selling sponsorship. And before that, I came from a corporate sales background where at least part of my sales strategy involved buying sponsorship. So I was a sponsor before I was a sponsorship seeker. And a good portion of that I also spent as a consultant. So I have a pretty varied background in a sense, but all pretty focused on the sponsorship space.
And so these days you are the president and the CEO of the Sponsorship Collective. Tell us more about what the organization does. And I'm also keen to understand why you started it. What need did you see?
Yeah. Well, I'll start with the need that I saw, and ultimately what I saw and experienced was a ton of waste and loss in the sponsorship space from everybody. And something else that's become apparent or became apparent to me was that brands themselves are frustrated with how properties, so sponsorship seekers, do sponsorship. And there's this little thing called ambush marketing that's cropped up pretty significantly. And I think it's the result of the way sponsorship seekers are doing sponsorship. I know some will look at the greed of the brands, maybe, but I actually think it's a disconnect in how sponsorship seekers are doing business. So, I saw some issues that I think needed to be fixed. And a big part of what we do then is, in fact, help organizations do best practice sponsorship in-house. And so, we don't do brokerage. And it's our belief and our stance that the best people to sell sponsorship are the rights holders. And so it's our goal and our mission to build that capacity and make sure people are doing smart sponsorship.
Very good. We all know that engaging a professional sponsorship valuation expert like yourself is the preferred way to value your inventory and your benefits, but not everybody can afford it. What are some of the ways people can still value their inventory if they can't engage an expert to help?
That's a very good question. And so, I think anyone who's engaged a valuation specialist probably had sticker shock the first time they saw how much it costs to do a valuation. believe me, I understand, right? I was on the other side. And in fact, part of how I developed my skill set was by doing it myself. And so, I'd say it's a fair comment that best practice, or at least one of the best practices, is to hire an expert in valuation. But the reality is that there's no secret formula. I think that it benefits the sponsorship consultant, which I am, of course, but I don't hold this view. I think it benefits the consultant to have sort of the sponsorship world think that this is more complicated than it is. It's not easy to do your own valuation, but it is possible. And so, I would say to those listening, there is not a secret formula. A sponsorship expert or valuation expert does not know the top secret value of a logo placement. And if you have been led to believe that that is the case, please find another consultant. You want to hire. So either hire a consultant who will show you everything and help you build capacity to do it for yourself in the future, or instead of investing the money, you have to invest the time, right? In life, we can either trade time or money, but we have to invest one. So the process to do it, in my view, and the way that I do it, my firm does it, we start with the audience, segmenting that audience into at least three kind of sub audiences, right? Nobody has the so-called general public. And if you do, you probably don't want them. You want a niche. You want a niche audience. So for me, it always starts with the audience. And then from there, we build an inventory of assets, the stuff you have to sell. And if you're not talking to your prospects and your sponsors to build out those assets, you're in trouble. So you want to be engaging your prospects. Then to me, it's about taking that audience and those assets and identifying similar media in the marketplace and what it's worth. So, anyone can do this as long as you have the confidence that you can and you have the time. There isn't a secret catalog of values. It really is about finding that similar media. And then what I do is the tricky part is determining the intangible value of your brand beyond advertising rates. So you're comparing like media, but you're also assigning a value to your brand, to what you do. And one trick that I often encourage people to do, if you're not sure what a tweet is worth or what a Facebook post is worth to your sponsor, go actually set up a campaign in Twitter or Facebook, an ad campaign. Add the audience stats and create an ad marketing to them. And Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn will tell you exactly what they would charge a sponsor if they went direct to your audience. So, this isn't rocket science, but you have to know where some of the tricks are. So what I've just described will probably take you several weeks, maybe several months. but you can do it yourself if you don't want to invest and hire someone.
I tell you what, great minds think alike. I've had on my list of potential blog posts is one to write a blog post exactly around what you just described about setting up a campaign in Facebook if you're not sure what a post is worth. Because like you just said, you should be able to reverse engineer, and you can play with geographic locations, sex, how much money you want to spend. But you can take all that information and figure out that a post will, you know, to reach X number of people would be charged at Y. So
yeah,
I'm going to pass that job to you. You can now write that blog post if that's okay with you. But I'm also glad that there is no secret formula. I was sitting down having a coffee with a client earlier this week, maybe last week, and their boss is convinced that there's a secret formula. And and I was, you know, the more it comes up in conversation, the more I think, oh, is it just me that doesn't know the secret formula as well? So I'm glad that I'm glad that we all don't know what the secret formula is.
Exactly. It's a secret that nobody actually knows the answer to. And I think a group of people pretend they do, but you, from my lips to your ears, everyone, there's not. And but you should hire a consultant if you want it done quicker, or if you maybe don't have the confidence to know whether or not you hit the numbers right, or maybe you want to learn the process so that you have capacity in your org. Those are good reasons to hire a sponsorship expert, but not understanding the process, in my view, is not the right reason.
Of course, absolutely agree. So if you do decide to engage a valuation expert, what are some of the common mistakes that you see people making when they engage people like that?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, the biggest mistake I see is no matter how I or we, when I say we, I mean sponsorship consultants, describe our services, I think everybody sees or wants to see brokerage. You go to a consultant and they're going to open doors for you. That's the biggest mistake. So a brokerage is something very specific. Yeah, obviously my bias has probably come across. I'm not a huge fan. I think you should do it in-house. But even secretly or subtly hoping that your consultant will open some doors, I think is a bad idea. The next mistake is that thinking this is a magic bullet and giving the consultant total control. You definitely want to be involved in this process every step of the way. And not because there should be distrust between you and your consultant, but because nobody cares about your property, your sponsorship property, the way you do. And being a passive participant in this process, to me, it spells trouble. And then I think if you're going to do it yourself, the biggest mistake is not spending the time and doing the research. You know, if you're going to do it yourself and you've never done it before, it's sort of a moderately complicated sponsorship property, you should expect to spend a couple of months, maybe even 3 or 4 months on this process before you have it just right. So, you know, stay involved and plan to commit some time to the process.
And staying involved helps you work alongside that expert and actually learn skills. There's skills transfer that happens, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, to me, one of the things that I valued most in every consultant that I've worked with is their belief that the sector should always be moving forward. And I think that's a core belief that we should hold as professionals, but especially our consultants should hold, right? This is about advancing the whole sector and everybody wins. And, just by way of example, today, shortly before we met, before we recorded this, I was doing a live session, an inventory building session with a client. And it just happened that my client mentioned what turned out to be a six-figure sponsorship asset. He hadn't considered it valuable. I didn't see it the 3 or 4 times I read over the material. But we had to sit down and have coffee with a few stakeholders for this to come out as something that was worth a ton of money. And so that's, to me, the value and importance of staying involved.
Very good. So we know we've established that there's no secret formula for valuation, but there is a formula that you've developed called the Ultimate Sponsorship Prospecting Formula, which sounds like a summer blockbuster movie title. So I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. What is it? Why is it so useful? And maybe if you could give us some examples of how it's been applied or how it can be applied.
I'm happy to. Listen, if that's the name of a summer blockbuster, it is officially the most boring movie on the planet.
But you have to say it in a voice that's had years of whiskey drinking and cigar smoking, and then it sounds very impressive.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe if Quentin Tarantino directed it, it would be great. But I think when people come to me and people come to my staff and my associates, everyone comes with the same perceived problem. They don't know who to talk to. But actually, that's not the problem. That's the result. So by not knowing your inventory and your audience and what you have to sell, you don't know who you should be talking to. And so I think most people turn it on its head and think, if I only had the right contact, then I could sell sponsorship. And so I developed the prospecting formula purely to turn that process on its head. So the formula is audience plus inventory, which is your assets times their valuation, equals your prospect. So when you know who your audience is and you know what you have to offer them, it will magically point to the right prospect. And so when you contact that prospect and tell them you have their audience and that you want to talk to them about ways to get them in front of that audience, believe me, when that phone rings, your prospect will answer the phone. So by way of example, you know, if you have a room full of physicians, all of whom can prescribe medication, and in your inventory is a product showcase, I think it's immediately obvious to everybody that pharma companies are a prospect, that probably professional insurance companies and people who support physicians make sense. But they also make purchases that are different than maybe the average citizen. So luxury brands and vehicles becomes an obvious prospect, but only if your inventory allows for that kind of contact. Similarly, if you have a room full of future tradespeople and teaching opportunities, then your prospect becomes trade unions looking for talent, post-secondary education, tool manufacturers, and so on. So starting with the prospect and then trying to figure out what to sell them, in my view, is backwards. You want to start with what you have to sell by way of asset, the audiences that you have access to. And believe me, your prospects will leap out at you.
The reason I like that approach is that, you know, you spoke about you shouldn't look at it backwards, is that it is the absolute fundamental difference between sales and marketing. Yeah. Sales is about the outcome for the person trying to sell something. So it's always focused on trying to shift something. So shift the sponsorship. Marketing is about how can we solve a problem for somebody else. So I have the pharma company over here has a problem. I've got a solution. That's the way that you should be looking at it.
Yeah, I have to say when I was a sponsor, or when I had a sponsorship budget, when my phone rang and someone said, you know, it was a business to business service, we have a room full of computer engineers. You know, we'd love to put you in front of them. How can we do it? My assistant put them through to me immediately. But when someone phoned me and said, you know, you have a lot of money, we'd like some of that money. Can you tell us how much you're willing to give us in exchange for this gold, silver, bronze package? My assistant never put them through to me. So
we might ask for the contact details of that assistant. Very cluey.
Maybe not. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So go on.
No, I just, you know, the formula comes from my own experience and it works well.
I think that networking for sponsorship and even helping the sponsors network with each other is hugely undervalued or maybe not done well, particularly in the sponsorship industry. How important do you think networking is as opposed to simply cold calling? And do you have any advice to make it easier and more successful for people?
Yeah, I do. And so I will say that as an asset, the opportunity to help sponsors network is fabulous. And if you can monetize it and make it a process that you can actually deliver on, it's brilliant and you should be charging for it. But in the absence of knowing the value and being able to charge for that, before every event, if it's an event-based sponsorship, I go to my sponsors and say, you know who's going to be in the room. Who are two people you absolutely have to meet? And I make it my job to introduce them. And I do that with all of my sponsors because I know if I'm telling them that it's an audience they want to be in front of and I can deliver at least two high-valued introductions, then I'm in business. So, but for a sponsorship seeker, you know, I think we all know this in our gut. Even the best cold callers are getting like 2-3% close rate, maybe. You know, it's cold calling is not a great way to do sponsorship. So, I mean, you know, I talk on my blog and in my courses some ways to warm up those cold calls. And one of those ways is networking. When you go to a networking event, everyone is there to network. So simply put, go meet people, but know who your audience is so that when you meet someone, you don't just work for the local rugby team or hockey team. Sure, you work for the hockey team, but your job is to connect people to, I don't know, high net worth moms who live in the suburbs and have two or more kids. You talk about what you do in that way at a networking event, not salesy, really just having a conversation. People will happily tell you, oh, you should talk to Dave over here. Let me introduce you. He wants to be in front of exactly that audience. So I think networking events are a great way to sharpen your pitch. And when I say pitch, I don't mean hard pitch to close. I mean just your kind of like your elevator pitch. And know that when you go, everyone is there for the same purpose, right? Everyone has pockets full of business cards. Yeah. They want to meet people. Nobody wants to be that guy or gal standing by the coffee machine by themselves.
Or playing Clash of Clans in the corner.
Totally. That's what I do before my wife wakes up to see how unproductive I truly am. So, you know, I find when I go to a networking event, I look for those people who are standing by themselves and I just go to talk to them about if it's in Canada, the weather, if it's in the US, politics.
Yeah, right. So another aspect I think is often overlooked or at least not leveraged well or maybe even consistently is the board, because the board is usually full of really experienced and well-connected business people. So how can a sponsorship manager make the most of their board, do you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, this relationship, at least in the charity, not-for-profit sector, this relationship with the board of directors is the bane of every sponsorship manager's existence. You know, you want to hear a crowd grumble during a talk, mention board relations, right? Like it's a real problem. And so, but I think that a big part of the problem is the way we approach our board members. And so I think we treat them like we treat our sponsors. We e-blast asking for contacts. But instead, my recommendation is treat board members the way we should treat sponsors, right? Do your research first. Figure out who your board members are connected to. Ask them for a cup of coffee. Go out, meet them for coffee. Talk to them about your audience. Talk to them about your value prop. And then ask that board member one-on-one for direct introductions to people they know, not vague recommendations of companies. Everyone knows you should ask Nike or Reebok for money. We get it. We don't need that advice. What we need are direct introductions. And if you've done your research first, you already know on LinkedIn that they're connected to two or three people that you want to meet. So ask for an introduction to them by name. Offer to write the email for your board member so they can just forward it. Instead of e-blasting and asking for, quote, contacts, you treat them like a title sponsor. They will open doors. If they don't, that is not the board member for you. And they either need to move on, or you need to recruit more board members, or you need to find another organization that has a board that can help you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with all of that. So let's skip ahead or fast forward a vast number of steps in the process of bringing a new sponsor on. Hmm. Once we get to the position of submitting a proposal, what are some of the things that you often see that people get wrong? Because it is a bit of a moment of truth, isn't it?
It is. And so, you know, I think the main thing that people get wrong is when the proposal stage is actually present, right? And so I think we know, or we have a sense that once you submit proposal, then the only thing a sponsor can do is say yes or no. And so we want to get there quickly. But the problem is, if you haven't earned the right to submit, if you haven't gotten explicit permission from your prospect to submit a proposal and get their feedback, it ultimately doesn't matter what it says in that sponsorship package, it's going to have a low response rate. So if you've genuinely earned the right to submit a proposal, you've asked the questions, can I put something together for you that you'd be willing to look over and give me some advice on? If you've asked that and they've said yes, then follow-up is the absolute key. I see people nervous or apprehensive that they're going to irritate or bother or pester their sponsor. But if they've agreed to see a proposal, you absolutely have the right to follow up, and it's important that you do. There's a case where I didn't follow up with a sponsor because I believed we just haven't had time to look at it yet, meant no. In fact, it didn't mean no, and I sold the sponsorship to one of their competitors instead, and I got raked over the coals by the sponsor, and it was well connected to my boy. It was bad. So you are not doing your sponsors any favors by assuming they're not interested. So you got to follow up. And then I think the second most common issue I see is gold, silver, bronze. It is a completely valueless addition to your sponsorship package and often harmful. So, you know, if someone agrees to see a sponsorship package, you really want to find out what they're after and offer them that and only that. Don't try to put it into a fancy gold, silver, bronze, or any other tiered, you know, descriptors. Every time I ask a sponsor or a sponsorship seeker, what do you think a logo placement is worth? You know, I get 1 cent to 3 cents. And then I say, now, what if I put the word gold above it? What do you think it's worth now? There's no difference. So a booth is a booth is a booth, whether or not you call someone a gold sponsor. So follow-up is key. And then, you know, if you invested this time with your sponsor, don't try to jam them into a standardized package.
I know you're a keen advocate of sponsor summits. Why do you think they are so great? And if somebody's looking to run some, what advice can you offer to help ensure that they do run a good one?
Yeah. So what I love about the sponsor summit, and ultimately, you know, consultants like to make up like cool, fancy terms for really simple things. And so sponsor summit is getting your sponsors together in a room in any environment. You know, I talk about kind of three models of summit, but ultimately even just getting together over coffee is or can be a summit. So the beautiful thing about a sponsor summit is that you offer them a networking opportunity, which is a value add. You get to know them in a different way. But to me, the most valuable thing, yes, to your sponsors, but I think mostly to you as a sponsorship seeker, it gives your leadership a chance to hear directly from the sponsor what they want. So your board doesn't want to do X, Y, Z, or they're uncomfortable with your, you know, your valuation strategy or your customized proposals. You put them in front of a sponsor and everything changes when the sponsor's telling them what they're willing to pay for. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been told by my boss, can't you just tell the sponsor to sponsor this? But you put them in front of that sponsor and let them try it, and suddenly they're converts. So it's kind of like the sponsorship seeker's ambush marketing tool, right? You can actually put everyone in the same room, everyone gets on the same page, and then you can show them a draft sponsorship package for next year and ask them to tell you in open air what they like, what they don't like, and what you should definitely not do. And they jump at the chance to have some free food and drink and influence your sponsorship policy.
Very good. I think that's some great advice. And I'm a big advocate of sponsorship summits as well. I think they're a fantastic tool in the kit bag.
Definitely.
We see a lot of sponsorships that include, we call it contra in our corner of the world. In the other corners of the world, some people call it in kind.
Yes.
For me, I can't put my finger on it necessarily, but it always feels like the rights holder is getting shortchanged somehow that, you know, I look at a contract and I think they'd be better off with the cash. Is in-kind or contra sponsorship actually okay? Is it something that people should be chasing or should they be focusing more on the cash?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the in-kind sponsorship. And I don't hold back when I talk about, in fact, I do a talk. I travel a lot and speak. And one of the talks that I give is called The Seven Deadly Sins of Sponsorship. And in-kind sponsorship is deadly sin number three. And the reason is this, you know, when you think I need sponsorship, I need wine, I'll go to a wine sponsor and they'll just give me free wine. You know, then I don't have to pay for wine. Isn't that delightful? There's a focus that if we avoid expense, we're somehow doing better than if we just bought the wine and then had someone else sponsor it and put their logo on it. And so, you know, I'll share a story briefly where I worked with two race properties, two running events. Property A got a bunch of stuff in kind to give to their racers. They didn't charge anything for it. They didn't get any cash for it, but they saved themselves about, I think it was like $3,500 in hard costs. Property B did a valuation and determined that the right to sponsor this in-kind gift was actually 50,000 Canadian dollars, which is like $8 American, but still it's it's a good chunk of cash. And so they did this for 6 years before speaking to each other, which means that property B brought home 300 grand in cash and property A saved themselves, I don't know, $10,000. So, you know, the view that kind of cutting down on expense, I think, ignores ROI. And so I think that we are missing out big time when we go for the free stuff versus valuing what that asset is actually worth.
It's also short-sighted, isn't it? Because just because you give a sponsor the opportunity to give away free stuff, and I'll just make up a number, it might cost them $2,000 to give you that free stuff, and it saves you that hard cost of $2,000. The yeah. value to that sponsor by having their product or brochures or whatever it is in front of a potential customer could be years of value that you're way undervaluing by just saying, absolutely. Oh, we'll just reduce the cost.
Well, I agree completely. And if you were to do some research into what others are charging to give away free stuff to the same audience that you have, you'll find that no one's doing that for free, for one. Two, every branding opportunity, speaking opportunity, and e-blast has a marketing cost, a marketing value. Every tweet, every Facebook post, every time you talk about the free wine, that has a hard sponsorship value. And, you know, I've never sold wine sponsorship for less than $3,000, $5,000. And I've sold some wine sponsorship for $25,000. And so I had to eat the cost of the $300 or $700 worth of wine, but then I ball that up into the activation costs and pass that on to the sponsor. So yes, more expenses show up on my accounting sheets, but I'm making way more money and my ROI is far better.
Let's say I've got myself in a situation where I do have some in-kind or contra sponsorship in place, but I've got a great relationship with that sponsor. Yep. What can I do to move them to cash instead?
Yeah, so this is the tricky thing. So I'll use wine as the example. If you are getting a wine producer to give you free wine, you are not going to move them up very easily, probably not at all, to that free wine plus cash. And so because ultimately their business is selling wine to events like yours, right? You are their customer. The value to get in front of the person in the room isn't high to them. So to me, wine is one asset. You go to your prospects and say to them, what are you trying to accomplish? How can I help you do that? Wine sponsorship may be the route for them. And so by way of example, you know, I sit on the board of the Association of Fundraising Professionals in Canada, or in Ottawa, which I think you have the Institute of Fundraising in Australia. Is that right?
I'll have to Google that.
Yeah, well, it's... You don't have AFP in Australia, so it's the whatever you have version in Canada.
Okay.
And so we have a room full of fundraisers, in other words. And so we had cocktail hour, and Canadians like to drink, and Canadian fundraisers really like to drink. And so we went out to a marketing firm. We said, how do you want to engage with people? Well, we want people to know that we're fun and laid back and cool. So we sold them sponsorship rights to the cocktail reception, which included wine. And then we let them name three drinks for which they recommended ingredients. And then we got the conference hall to provide those ingredients and mix free drinks for people. And they were called the Cosmopolitan and the Charity Ryan Coke, right? Like we kind of punned on the sector.
Yeah, nice.
And yeah. And so, and then we let the marketing firm serve the drinks. So they walked around serving people the drinks, meeting everyone in the room, having a great conversation. So we could have got $180 worth of free wine, or we could have taken several thousand dollars for the asset by not going to a wine company. And that's what we chose to do. So you probably won't move a wine person, a wine company, up to cash for wine sponsorship. But that doesn't mean that it's not a valuable asset.
So is that your favorite activation, or have you got another one that you can share with us?
I do have another one.
Okay.
And so this one's my favorite because it also let me tell my boss, I told you so.
We always love those stories.
Yeah, but they always come to bite you in the butt after. So
he's one of our most avid listeners too, I understand.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So I had a boss who told me that I could not have a photo booth at our gala unless I could get it, quote, sponsored, which meant getting it for free. So save $350 and then we can have a photo booth. So instead, I went out to my prospects, and one of them was an accounting firm. And I asked them, you know, what's your biggest goal? Like, what are you trying to accomplish, and who's your audience? Lo and behold, it was our audience. But what they wanted to do was convince the audience that they weren't boring accountants. They were hip, young, cool. So I floated this idea of the photo booth to them. And I said, how can we make this cool? How can we use this as an opportunity to connect you to your audience? And they were all comic book nerds. Like the four partners were comic book nerds. So they said, can we go and get like commercial grade superhero outfits? And instead of people holding up those stupid mustaches and silly hats, can we dress them up like Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman? And so that's what we did. They went out and rented these incredibly realistic costumes. People came to our gala and got to dress up like Batman and then take a cool photo with those like old time, you know, POW and whammy, you know, cutouts for when you get hit by a superhero in the like 70s versions of superhero TV shows. And people had a riot. Then the managing director of the firm took the stage dressed as Bane in Batman, like the Bane, the villain with the mask and the voice. And he basically threw down and told the crowd, you come to us. This is how we do business. We're going to mix you a martini. We're going to make you a cappuccino. We're going to hang out. We're not going to talk numbers. We're going to just help you run a better business. They paid $10,000 for that booth that my boss told me I had to get for free for $350. And they paid for the hard costs of getting all that, the activation, all that stuff there. So that was easily the coolest activation I'd worked on. And it came with a great big, I told you so to my boss.
Love it. Absolutely love that idea. Before we start to wrap things up, I know you're organizing and running the Virtual Sponsorship Summit online.
Yes,
I've signed up. Speakers awesome. Look great. Very excited. Tell the listeners about it and obviously where they can sign up and all that sort of stuff. Give it a plug.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to. So look, the Sponsorship Summit is a virtual event. I love conferences as much as the next guy. The problem with conferences is that the most brilliant sponsorship thought leaders live all over the world, and it's horribly expensive to get them in one place. So the virtual summit lets me bring together 27 just brilliant sponsorship and a few Cosmark thought leaders. And these thought leaders are going to talk and share their ideas and trends. And basically 5,000 people get to come for free and watch it. So it was initially meant to go live in October, but it's been bumped to March because of two things. One, there's been an incredible reaction from speakers, and so I want to interview more. And two, I've been taken away by a handful of very large, awesome, but demanding national clients. And so I had to bump the summit. But it is happening, and it is going to be something like 28 continuous hours of sponsorship education from the world's leading authorities. So best place to find information, come to my website, sponsorshipcollective.com, and sign up. And I'll send you some information.
And a little birdie told me it was free.
It is. Yes, it is free. It is a completely free event, underwritten entirely by the Sponsorship Collective and a couple of our very cool partners so that it can be free.
It's crazy. Okay, so apart from the Sponsorship Collective, signing up for the Virtual Sponsorship Summit, and of course following Sponserve, what other sponsorship resource do you think is really valuable that people should be following regularly?
So I'm... there's this outfit, not quite a startup, but I think they're pretty lean, called the Sponsorship Space out of Toronto, Canada. And I think these guys and gals are all running it, as volunteers, right? They all have day jobs in sponsorship, and they are curating awesome content, high quality, useful to everyone all over the world. It is definitely not Canadian specific. So they're the Sponsorship Space. I love them. They're not paying me to say this, but I'll gladly let them if they want to. And then the next couple of resources I think are absolutely stellar. Abby from Infinity Sponsorship, who I know has been on the show.
Yes.
Vicky Saunders out of Australia.
She's also been on the show?
Brilliant. Absolutely. And we recently discovered that she and I are retired punk rockers from back in the day. We were both in bands with funny hairdos. I had a mohawk. Lead singer, guitar players turned sponsorship consultants.
Well, so I have seen a photo of her in that getup.
Yes. Well, I have one that is nowhere near as attractive, but certainly a silly haircut in tow. So the Australians are producing some outstanding stuff. And then I have to give a call out to the Cause Marketing Forum and the peer-to-peer fundraising folks, David Hesekiel out of the U.S. Absolutely brilliant content around sponsorship and cause marketing if you're in the cause space.
Excellent. Chris, if people want to get in touch with you, what can they do?
Well, you can join my clan on Clash of Clans. or kidding.
I'm going to pretend to know what that means.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for humoring. Best place to go is my website, sponsorshipcollective.com. Make sure you sign up for the updates. And I am super active on Twitter at CP Bayless. And of course, Chris at sponsorshipcollective.com. You can shoot me an email. Takes me a couple of days to respond, but I always do.
Very good. And we'll put links to all those resources that you mentioned, the formula, the summit, the social media links, the websites. We'll put all the links in the show notes for everybody. Chris Bayless, President and CEO of the Sponsorship Collective. Thank you so much for sharing your advice and insights on Inside Sponsorship.
Absolute honor. Thanks for having me.
Awesome chat and just so much good practical advice from Chris, but also delivered in a way that makes seeing how you can best apply it really simple. Plus some fantastic stories and examples, and who doesn't like a good story? All of the links to Chris, his social profiles, and the Virtual Sponsorship Summit are in the show notes. Just head to sponserve.net, and I can tell you his sponsorship content is definitely worth subscribing to. As always, thanks for listening to the show. If you want to connect with me, then you can do so on LinkedIn. Just search for Daniel Loyston, or drop me an email at daniel@sponserve.net, or on Twitter using the handle @sponserve. If you want to connect with Mark, you can find him on LinkedIn under Mark Thompson, or shoot him an email at mark@sponserve.net. It is always great to hear from you guys, so send us an email or just give us a call and let us know if you've got any topics or questions you'd like us to cover off, or just say hi and we'll make sure you get a shout out on the show. Of course, as always, if you've got 2 minutes and you love the show, then be sure to head to iTunes and leave us a quick review, because it really does make a big difference in helping others discover the show, so we'd really appreciate it. Until next time, I'm Daniel Loyston. Thanks for listening to Inside Sponsorship.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more episodes, blogs, and resources, head to sponserve.net or search for Sponserve on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn.